Welcome everyone to Wise Talk. Today we're excited to welcome Carol Robin, co-founder and head of programs of leaders in tech, a nonprofit which brings two decades of lessons to Silicon Valley startups. Carol was the Dorothy J. King lecturer in leadership at Stanford's Graduate School of Business, where she helped to further develop the Interpersonal Dynamics course, which is the touchy-feely course, in case anybody doesn't know, including co-developing the executive version. Her newest book, co-authored with David Bradford, is called Connect: Building Exceptional Relationships with Family, Friends, and Colleagues. So thank you for being with us. It's a pleasure. We've had David on before, so this is a treat to have you. All right, Carol. So we want to talk about your book. We want to talk about touchy-feely. Before we do any of that, I want to know kind of what brought you to this book.
So I've had a lot of different careers. I started in sales and marketing. I was in consulting. I was in industrial automation. And I've had my nonprofit era, what I call my nonprofit era. My Stanford gig was the longest I've been at anything that I've done. I was there for 17 years.
Wow.
And how did I end up co-authoring this book? We have to start with how did I end up at Stanford? Because I would have never co-authored this book if I hadn't ended up at Stanford. Right. Frankly, I ended up at Stanford kind of on a lark. I had gone back to get a PhD when I decided that I wanted to leave sales and marketing and get into organization development and consulting and coaching. And I thought, you know, I kind of want to know what I'm doing. I'm affecting people's lives. So maybe I should get a little more education. I was halfway through a master's in chemistry when I realized I didn't want to be a chemist. So that's as far as I'd gotten. However, I had gotten some of the basic business stuff because I was at Northwestern at the time. They were very magnanimous and let me take some business courses. So I knew accounting and basic accounting, finance, little marketing. Anyway, I decided I didn't want an MBA. I wanted to go back and get a PhD. And I ended up getting a PhD in human and organization systems. And in that process, one of the gentlemen who was on my dissertation committee was actually very close with David Bradford, my co-author.
Ah, I see.
And Charlie, his name was Charlie Seashore, and he said to me,
"Oh yeah,
you know, Carol, you should go meet David Bradford over at Stanford because they teach this course and it's very oversubscribed." At the time, they were teaching three sections of 36 students.
Oh, wow.
And I joined them when they had gotten to four. And by the time I left, we were teaching 12 sections of 36 students.
Oh, my God. Super popular.
It was on the rise. And at the time, I was a partner and principal at a consulting firm, and I was traveling all over the world. So it wasn't really going to be all that practical for me to suddenly go teach all the time. But I thought, well, a quarter a year, I can be off the road.
Sure.
And so, you know, and I remember vividly walking down the hall at Stanford at the business school and looking at all the names on the doors and thinking, wow, I wonder what it would be like to have my name on one of those doors. Never in a million years imagining someday I would not have a name, become known as the Queen of Touchy Feely, you know, become the director of the Leadership Fellows Program. I mean, it was just a lark, really.
Sure.
And so then what happened is David was like, yeah, you'd be perfect. So I went to work teaching one quarter a year because that was the only bandwidth I had. And then a number of years later, maybe the school came to me and said, would you consider a full-time appointment? Because there's a whole lot we'd like you to do here. To get off the road for a bunch of personal reasons, I took a leave from my consulting firm and said, yeah, okay, sure. I'll be full-time for a couple of years. Then I completely fell in love with my students, decided this is what I was put on the planet to do, let my partners buy me out from my consulting firm, settled into my Stanford full time. And frankly, to this day, I absolutely adore my students and I adored what I taught. And by 2017, let me just say that no matter how much I love the students and what I taught, the elite academic institution environment was no longer for me. Mm-hmm. There was too big a cost to pay for me to keep doing it. And when I left, I had earned retirement. I was not ready to retire, but I'd earned it. And so I chose to retire. And when I did, my biggest fear was, wow, I'm not done. And the thing that Stanford did give me that I will always be grateful to is an amazing cohort of students every year who really wanted to learn this and soak this up and then go change the world with what they learned. And that was the hardest thing for me to leave.
Right.
So that's when I started Leaders in Tech, which we can come back to. And that's turned out to be actually a real blast.
Right. And let's go back to the book. So certainly touchy-feely had something to do with the book.
Oh, yeah. In early 2017, an editor from Penguin Random House came to us and said, so let's see, you have this class that thousands of students for decades have said was worth the whole price of admission and has not only changed their life at the time, but continues to change their life. Why is there no book? And David and I said, because you can't really learn this stuff in a book. You actually have to engage with other people to become more interpersonally competent. You can't read about it. And they said, so you're okay with the only people being armed with these skills and competencies being those that are privileged enough and lucky enough to get into the Stanford Graduate School of Business?
Kind of got you there.
And that's when David and I looked at each other and said, I guess we're just going to have to find a way to write a book. And that's how the book came to be. It took us 4 years.
So tell us a little bit about the premise of the book. And in that way, you could probably tell us the premise of the course as well.
Yeah. The premise of the course is that interpersonal competence is a determinant of both professional and personal success, right? From a business standpoint, people do business with people. And that's why it's such a popular course at the business school. And of course, why is it a determinant of personal success is probably obvious. So the premise of the book is to take the lessons learned by the students in touchy-feely. They call it affectionately touchy-feely. The course is actually called Interpersonal Dynamics. I always thought it should have been called Connecting Across Differences, by the way, because it's really easy to connect with people that are just like you.
Right.
And bring those lessons to, as our publisher wanted, the world. Now, one of the things that we realized when we sat down to read the book was we were thinking about, like, what happens to these students? Like, what do they learn? What is their takeaway and how do they get there? And that's why it took us so long to actually, and then by the way, how do we have a reader have an experience that's in some ways that does justice to the work, really? Because it's not a book you're going to pick up at the airport in New York, read on your way to San Francisco, and then put in your shelf and say, oh, that was interesting. We weren't going to write three keys to better relationships. It's just a whole lot more complicated than that. We landed, as the title implies, on what does it take to build exceptional relationships? Mm-hmm. And there's six core hallmarks, which we'll come back to in a moment.
Yeah.
But more central is that relationships exist on a continuum.
Yes.
At one end of the continuum is either contact and no connection or dysfunction. At the other end of the continuum is what we came to call exceptional, which I'll come back and describe in a moment. But the continuum is important because along the way, you reach functional, robust, strong, satisfying without necessarily having to get all the way to exceptional. We're not trying to say that you should try to turn every relationship in your life into exceptional because that would be, first of all, impossible. Second of all,
it's too hard. So let's go through those six real quick. I mean, I don't want to spend our whole time on it, but what I want to do is I want to talk about the book and those six hallmarks. And then what I want to do is apply it to the situation that we're all in right now, because we're, I think, in a very unique situation. Unlike when we went into the pandemic, we all kind of were in a similar boat, but now we're going to all be in all over the place. So,
absolutely. So these six hallmarks also exist on this continuum. What happens when you get to exceptional is that not only are they all present, but they're all present to a great depth. So think of these six as the way to move along the continuum.
Right.
So the first one is you can be more fully yourself and so can the other person. Neither one of you is into spinning your image, or at least you don't believe that that's the way to create more relationship. The second one is related to the first, which is that you're both willing to be vulnerable. Now, that doesn't mean, bleh, I'm going to tell you everything. And that's why we talk a lot about incremental vulnerability and testing, expanding outside your comfort zone a little bit at a time.
Right.
The third one is that you trust that self-disclosures won't be used against you.
Mm.
And as you can see, those first three are iterative, right?
Right.
I take a little bit of risk in telling you a little bit about me. Then maybe you reciprocate, tell me a little bit about you.
Yep.
Then we've both been a little vulnerable. Then we both trust each other a little more. Mm-hmm. That's how trust gets built.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The fourth one is you can be honest with each other. Mm-hmm. Another way of putting that is you believe that in telling each other the truth, you create stronger relationships. Mm-hmm. That's actually a belief and a mental model. Mm-hmm. That one includes your willingness to give and receive feedback and name what we call pinches, which is something that's not a huge catastrophe, but a little annoying. The fifth one is you deal with conflict productively. Every relationship has conflict. If it's going to do these other things that I just talked about, if you're actually going to tell each other the truth and you're going to, you know, be honest with each other, you're going to have some conflict. You can either see conflict as something to avoid, sweep under the rug, or something that'll weaken a relationship, or you can see it as something that can actually strengthen a relationship.
Right.
And the sixth one is that you're both committed to each other's growth and development. And when you have all six of those, you've already moved off of the end that's contact, no connection, and dysfunctional. And you've moved in towards exceptional. And again, we believe every relationship can at least get to functional and robust if you adhere to this. Not get exceptional, may not need to.
I want to apply this to what we're going through right now. I mean, I just wrote a paper and I think you got that. And the paper that I wrote has to do with, we have a chance to refresh our conversations, refresh our relationships, because we went out 18 months ago without any warning, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to focus this on
no tech. Training. Nobody had already told us about that. We might
Here we
need
go.
Some things.
But, no yeah. training. And we went out but the point I was making is that we were in tech, and I'm not talking about frontline workers. I'm talking about tech right now. We all went out, and it was the same. Unless you're in biotech and at the lab, I'm talking about. We all went home, and we were all in the same boat. Now it's all over the map.
Yeah.
And
as you say, fragmented.
It's and chaotic, and it already is starting to be, but it's going to even be more so. Like I think a lot of companies are doing the September thing because of kids go back to school and. So using September as the now we're going to be hybrid, you know, before we work from anywhere, now we're going to definitely go into hybrid. So we want you to come back to the office. So I think that it's going to potentially fracture, you know, we could do choices here, but it could potentially fracture our relationships even more because it's going to be more chaotic. And it's just a perfect storm for dropping the ball essentially. But it can also be a chance for us to freshen or to refresh or to start afresh, whatever metaphor works, these relationships. I want to spend a little time on that. I want to open it up to the group. Because I think that these ideas here, I think are, you know, even more important now. Of course, you wrote the book right in the middle of the pandemic or before.
We started it pre-pandemic, pre-pandemic.
So talk a little bit, you use a couple of them or however you want to do that to sort of apply it to like how you're seeing things now. And
first, let me say that one of the things that happened during the pandemic is that, especially in business, is that tasks got more and more foregrounded while relationships became more and more backgrounded.
That's a great point.
And work still had to get done. People were more and more exhausted by Zoom. They had less and less relationship stuff happening. And we human beings adapt. And so now that's the new normal. We used to actually ask each other how we were doing and what we did over the weekend and how your son was and how did that your daughter's softball game turn out? And, you know, so.
Right.
So that's the first thing that happened that we have to both be aware of and proactive about doing something about.
Yeah.
The second thing that I'll say is that, and it's related, is that the things that we talk about that are tools and ways to move relationships along this continuum and reach some of these hallmarks are something you have to double down on now. Mm-hmm. You have to do it even more. And by the way, lots of people were doing it even before the pandemic, but now they really have to do it.
Right.
So I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
One of our leaders in tech fellows, we have a number of different offerings. One of them is a fellowship, year-long fellowship for CEO founders. One of them, after he went through our year-long program, it was right at the beginning of the pandemic. And one of the things that he'd learned about the power of disclosure, the power of vulnerability. He was a convert and the pandemic began. And one of the things that we do in Leaders in Tech is when we start a session, we have each person go around and essentially say, if you really knew me right now. And it has to include three feeling words because, you know, they call it touchy-feely because of the emphasis on the feely.
Because the
if
word.
I Yeah, a different F word. Because if you're really going to know me and I'm going to be willing to be known, it's not about my deepest, darkest secrets. It's about how am I feeling right here, right now. Right. So if I was going to model that, I'd say, if you really knew me right now, you would know that I'm excited to be on this podcast with you. A little bit tired because I've lost track of how many of these I've done. Somewhat disappointed and disillusioned that the message of the book is taking so long to get out there into the world. Very disappointed in our publisher and the job that they did.
Sorry.
And really thrilled that I have a new 5-month-old grandson, because if you really knew me, you'd know that everyone in my life is served by that, because I have two things I really care about to spread my obsessive compulsiveness across. All right. So that took maybe 30 seconds, right? I was a little vulnerable. You just got to know me a little bit better. And if we were having a conversation and an exchange that would be going farther, then I suspect you might be willing to reciprocate and say, you know, so what would I know about you, Sue, if I really knew you? You can answer that, but I'll finish the story, which is that this wonderful fellow started a norm where he brings his team of 8 C-suite together every other week, and they start their meetings with, if you really knew me.
Yeah, I love it.
If you really knew me right now, and they all have their vocabulary of feelings, which, by the way, is in the appendix of the book, and awesome. Which every student who takes the class has as part of their syllabus. And they actually, and they've laminated theirs, and they actually have to pull their vocabulary out and find 3 feelings.
Well, I just, again, it sounds like a simple thing. I mean, that's the first thing that I said in my article, is that to understand one another and to start afresh, do check-ins. I mean, it was the first thing I said, and it sounds so simple. What you just said was so simple, but it grounds us and it disarms us.
Yeah.
And the article is about taking our armor off. It's like, we need to disarm ourselves and get vulnerable, because and immediately if we see what's going on for us, especially right now, you know, in the moment, then it's sort of hard to be an asshole, actually. It really is. Yeah. It's really hard to be an asshole.
And I guess I'd say the other thing is, if I am being an asshole, then you might have a little better context as to why I'm being.
Exactly.
And you
because
might
what's going on with
a
you.
Little more of a break. Yes.
Exactly.
I do think that there are check-ins and there are check-ins. And so the way in which you structure and intentionally and deliberately ask for a check-in that actually has people have to take a bit of the armor off matters.
Yeah.
If you really knew me, you'd know that we were at a wonderful barbecue over the weekend and it was really fun. Did you really get to know me? But it's a check-in. Well,
I think that check-in is a wonderful one, because it's something you can do every time and it's going to be different.
Exactly.
So, and I mean, I said the same thing. It's like saying, how's everybody going? How's everybody doing? Or how are you doing? Is not going to do
fine.
The trick now. It's like, fine.
Yeah, fine. I'm fine. I'm ready. I'm ready to go.
Yeah. And I had a series of questions. And I mean, I think that it's interesting to pose different kinds of questions. But I think the idea, I love the idea of, like, if you don't want to know me now, you'll know that I was scrambling to get on this call because I was trying to make sure that my son was out the door, and he was knocking on the door, like, as in like at the hour. And, you know, so it was a little bit frazzling. And so for me to be able to, like, just, you know, just get here, despite that, you'll know that I'm what I'm dealing with. So you'll know me.
Yeah. And I'll know that you were feeling frazzled. And, you know, how are you feeling right now?
Well, great. Cause I knew once I got into this, because I love, this is one of my favorite things to do, that I would be fine. And
so you're
that,
feeling, what's the feeling word?
Oh, yes. I'm feeling relieved and I'm feeling happy for sure.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. Thanks
for that. Now I know you even better.
Even more. Okay. Awesome. Yeah. So Michael.
Oh, hi. Yeah. And I put the same question, Kat. Thank you so much. I'm so enjoying the meeting today. I'm coaching a client who works in a very, I just call it a tough industry, you know, a whole business of very big numbers, and, you know, I'll say real estate business, but a very large public real estate company, and the executives there, she's having a lot of trouble. And one of the things that I know happens to her is there are times where in her old company, she's new in this company, she would have been able to share sort of feelings that one might call vulnerable, or feelings that are not quote unquote positive. And for lack of a way to put it, Carol, they don't know how to deal with that. So she'll do stuff in front of them. And she's had me observe their meetings. And I can see these, it is mostly fellas, but I can see these guys going like, they don't know how to deal with it. It freaks them out and they lose confidence in her. And it's very unfair and it creates kind of a bad cycle. And I'm kind of not blaming anybody in the system, but I want to hear your thoughts about that.
Well, I have a couple. The first is that in the book, we talk about something called the 15% rule. And the 15% rule essentially says we all have our comfort zone where we don't think twice about what we say. They imagine three concentric circles, the middle circle. Then there's a circle on the outside, which is the danger zone. In a million years, I'd never say that. And then there's the circle in the middle, which is the learning zone. Okay. In order to become more interpersonally competent, we actually have to step outside our comfort zone. My students used to say, but Carol, the minute I'm outside my comfort zone, how do I know I'm not in my danger zone? How do I know I'm in the learning, in that middle
or the other person's danger zone?
Or the other person's, exactly. And yeah. So we used to say, think 15% outside your comfort zone, just a little bit. And if you disclose 15% outside your comfort zone, you're unlikely to freak yourself out or the other person quite as much. So the first place I go to is one of curiosity about what is the impact of her disclosures on them and her becoming curious about that and seeing if she can learn more about what's happening for them. At the same time, their response is having an impact on her. So to the extent that their response is impacting her in a way that's not good for all of them, aren't they better off knowing than not knowing? So now we're into the role of feedback in creating a stronger relationship and moving along the continuum. If I'm doing something that's distancing you, putting you off, making you less likely to want to spend time with me, and you don't tell me, what are you going to do? What am I going to do? I'm going to keep doing it. And the more I do it, the more it's going to put you off. There's something about somebody breaking a cycle, perhaps, that they're in. And naming.
Thank you for that. Yeah, that's most of what we're trying. I think part of what's happened is what she thought was within the 15% wasn't.
Yeah. Well, it was within hers, but not theirs.
That's right. And kind of like Sue was saying, their comfort zone. And she's now got a bit of a brand, right? And so she's in a spot where now what might have been fit within this more allowable circle. So anyway, that's right. And clearly the goal is to get to a place where she and them and everybody can either share or talk about sharing and work it out. And so that's where we're heading. But I just appreciate your thoughts about that. I think what happened to her is what used to be 15%. Feels like close to zero for her. And she has to wonder, can she live in that environment? And right. And how tough is that? And how bad is it? And
yeah.
And by the way,
if I was her boss and I really valued her, I'd at least want to know that that's what's happening for her.
Yeah.
Before I
left. That's the first goal. That's right. Yeah. Thank you very much.
And the other thing that I'll add is that there is a great deal of grit and courage and strength in having her say, maybe not to all of them, maybe start with one, maybe start with the one that's more likely to be the most receptive or her boss, to say, hey, you know, I'm struggling here and I'm afraid that I've been branded, because we don't know if she's been branded or not. Branded is an attribution of something they've done, which we don't know whether they've done or not.
Well, actually, in this case, they use their values for feedback. And without getting into too many of the details, one of the values that they gave her some feedback, she was, you know, hurt and felt this was unfair. But like you say, what did you say? They're complicated. So
yes,
thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is I would encourage her to be careful with what she says, so that she sticks with her reality, which is when I do this and you respond this way, that makes me feel why. And you know, when you interrupt me three times in a meeting, I feel irritated. And the more irritated I get, the less likely I am to offer up my opinion. But you started the meeting by saying you wanted to hear from everybody. So I think you should know that you're likely to hear less from me if you continue to interrupt. That's kind of the way to provide the feedback to them about the impact of their behavior on her. as opposed to you're just trying to dominate, which is what we call over the net.
Michael, thanks for plunging ahead and being vulnerable with the question. Okay. I want to talk about this 15% comfort. I use the same comfort learning and danger zone. I love it. I love it a lot. I use it when I sell coaching, when you're trying to pick a coach, don't pick somebody that's your hairdresser. You know, you got to pick somebody you feel comfortable with, but at the same time, will push you, right?
Right. Challenge and support. You need them both or you won't grow and develop.
Right. That's right. And so that's the way that a manager, an employee should look at their manager as well. Same idea. Besides just using that mental model, what are some ways that managers can use that model in this time that we're in right now?
Well, we're back to a real, I'm going to keep coming back to this fundamental principle, which is that which remains unspoken becomes unspeakable.
Mm.
And you can't just go from 0 to 100 in one fell swoop.
Yeah.
So what we're best served by right now, I think what we're always best served by, but especially right now, is what we just talked about, which is naming the things that are working and that aren't working. Wow, you're slowing down enough to give us an opportunity to kind of check in and see how we're all feeling. I really appreciated that because I had no idea that, John was struggling with X. And so it does not have to be feedback on something that I wish you would do differently. It can also be feedback on stuff that I really appreciate you're doing that I hope you'll do more of.
Right.
But creating the space for more of that kind of conversation.
Right.
And because
it has to be intentional.
Exactly. It has to be. And the trap that we really got into during COVID, and it was a problem even before the pandemic, but the trap is to think we got so much we got to get done. We don't have time for that stuff. But you know what? People do business with people.
Yeah.
They don't do business with ideas or machines or products or strategies or plans. They do business with people. So unless you pay attention to the people part, I wouldn't bet that that's going to be the key to success.
Well, what we've noticed about Zoom is that it is, you mentioned this before, I don't know if you use this word, but it's more transactional. It's just easy to get in. You're on the call.
Task before relationship.
Yeah, you're in the box. It's let's get into the call and let's do it.
Hollywood squares.
Right, exactly. And so you don't have a chance to linger. Like at least when we're in a meeting in the same room, there's a chance before the meeting actually starts to linger a bit and linger before and after. And I think, so one of the things I'm suggesting to people is that find a way to linger. Like you can actually get on Slack after or get on the phone after with somebody. And whether you're on Zoom still, because a lot of, again, I don't know what the percentages are, but let's just say it's 70% of people are still going to be working from home. Yeah. It's a lot more than people going back to the office. So you're out. We still can start afresh, even though we might be in the same work model. We still can start afresh and start doing some more, not being so transactional.
Yeah. And I mean, to your point, I know some folks who have actually begun to open the Zoom room 5 minutes ahead of time, leave the Zoom room 5 minutes afterward. And those who want to hang around in the same way you used to at a meeting.
I've also seen people open up the Zoom room all day, a separate Zoom room all day as a way to just people literally be at the water cooler. They go in and have you seen that? Yeah, it's kind of cool too. Your team. Let's talk about feedback because I think it's just, everybody knows I need to give it and get it. I think it's still hard. I guess you have it officially under your fourth honest with each other, but I mean, I suspect that it's a part of all of these hallmarks in some respect. So let's talk about that.
Because embedded in any piece of feedback is a disclosure.
Yeah.
If I'm going to give you feedback, I'm also going to have to tell you how your behavior is impacting me. By definition, that's a disclosure.
That's right.
Now, one of the things that is really hard for me, Sue, is that so many people have had feedback training. I guess some training is better than none, but sometimes some is worse than none because there's so many bad practices out. So feedback is, first of all, is a skill, as we both know. And there are ways to give it in ways that are easier for the other person to hear and less likely to land. And it's also, people have mental models about feedback. Like when I say to people, so what's the first thing that comes to mind when somebody says, okay, can I give you some feedback? You go okay. As opposed to wow, yeah, sure, how cool. I'm probably going to learn something.
To learn, yeah.
I was on a Clubhouse right before I came on your podcast with a couple of former students of mine and called Behind the Mask, by the way. And one of them said to me, Carol, do you ever get sick of getting feedback? I said, That's like asking me if I ever get sick of chocolate. No, not, no. Would I want only a diet of chocolate? No, but do I ever get sick of it? No. He was like, somehow I thought that's what you were going to tell me. But that's because I have so internalized the belief that it's always a gift, because I happen to be a big believer in data, and more data is better than less data. So to the extent that feedback contains some data, I am better off. So let's start with the mental model shift that a lot of people have to make around. Mm-hmm. Now, mental model, we create those mental models for good reasons. We've all either had an experience, been witness to an experience where feedback went terribly awry. And what happens in those cases? 9 times out of 10, there are, I think, 3 things missing, which are addressed by the model that's in the book. It's central to the course. Yes. And it's therefore central to the book. The students call it the net. So imagine 3 realities in any exchange between 2 people. There is my intent and how I see things. There's what I do. That's reality number one. There's reality number two, which is what I do, what I say, how I say it. That's reality number two. That's the only reality known to both of us. And there's reality number three, which is the impact of what I said and did on you. Mm-hmm. Okay, now there's a metaphorical net between reality number one and two. I do something, you have no idea why I did it unless I tell you why I did it or said it. Quick example, my husband comes home. This is many, many years ago. It's one of the many examples I use in podcasts because it's very easy to make the point. It's also in the book. My husband comes home after a long day's work, plops down on the couch, picks up the newspaper. I come zooming around the corner. I've been home with 2 little kids. I'm like, oh my God, you're home. Thank God. Blah, 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 blah. And he's like, Okay. So let's think about this. The only reality we both know is the reality that anybody watching this would know, which is that I'm speaking, I'm a little agitated, and I'm getting no eye contact, and the only response I'm getting is a grunt. That is what is behaviorally specific, reality number two. But you know what I used to say? You're not listening. I don't know what, I'm not in his head. I don't know whether he's listening or not. And by the way, I feel that you're not listening, for those of you who've been trained with I messages, is not an I message. It's still an attribution, and it doesn't have a single feeling.
Especially if you're saying you're not, I feel like you're not doing something.
Yeah. And by the way, I feel that you're not listening doesn't have a single feeling word in it. So if you're going to stay on your side of the net, A, you've got to be behaviorally specific, and B, you have to talk about the impact of the other person's on your behavior, period. That's the data you have for them. Honey, when I speak to you and you make no eye contact and the only response I get is a grunt, I don't feel heard. And when I don't feel heard, I feel sad and I feel distanced. And I'm telling you this, this is the other important part of it, my intent. And I'm telling you this because I want to be there for you in a way that I'm not sure I can be unless you can be there for me. When I used to say, you're not listening, he used to say, yeah, I am. And by the way, he was, because then he'd repeat, yeah, you went to that new nursery school, hasn't opened yet, you're all spun up. And then I'd get even more furious, right? So I had to stay on my side of the net. When you do X, I feel Y, and I'm telling you this because.
Right.
And that allows us to move into a problem-solving conversation, which is the purpose of feedback. The purpose of feedback is not to change somebody. Purpose of right. feedback is to say,
let him know, right?
We have a problem here. The way you're behaving isn't working for me. So what shall we do about it?
I love that because the intent is important, but it isn't actually as important as the second reality, which is this is what's happening.
This behavior, is, this is behaviorally behavior specific. And
behavior specific, and then the implication or the impact on you.
Exactly.
I love that. Let's take this to a business context. In some respects, it might be easier in some ways, easier to say that to your husband because there's more security in terms of, you know, the vulnerability. But if we're taking this to a business context, sometimes people don't feel that secure in their relationship with somebody to be able to do that. So assuming that's the case, assuming that they are, yeah. there is some security. So what would be an example of what they could, how they could say something?
Let's say that my boss, this is the 4th time he's changed in his mind about what he wants in that report.
That sounds like me. Okay.
That's a behaviorally specific thing. You asked me to do this. I did it. I came back. You asked me to do this instead. I did it. I came back. This is the fourth time you've done it. Now, let's say that the impact on me is that I'm feeling this is where you need the vocabulary of feelings. It's in the appendix of the book. It's in the syllabus of the course. You actually have to go pull up your vocabulary. I feel, what do you feel? I feel frustrated. I feel unimportant. I feel lost. I feel discouraged. I feel let down. So first you have to get in touch with what are you feeling? Now, let's say you're saying this to your boss. So I'll be you, or I'll be this person who is speaking to my boss. And I'll say, and you know, the result of my feeling discouraged and frustrated is that I don't have quite as much energy as I want to have for the fifth revision. And I'm telling you this because I can't imagine that's what you want as the outcome. I imagine you want me to go at this with all the energy that I've got, which I had on the first round. So is there something that we could do to avoid the ongoing shift in what you know, is there something you need from me? Is there something I can do for you? And then we'd have to have an interpersonal exchange. Okay, right. What do you need from me? What do I need from you? Is there some other way? Now, one of the most, I'll hesitate to say the most, but one of the most important things a leader can do is model being a good receiver. Because if you don't model being a good receiver, people won't tell you the truth. And then you get to find out about what actually happened way down the road when it's a lot harder to fix.
Right. That's great. I love that example. Carol, anything else you want to impart in terms of these hallmarks, in terms of applying them to how we move into this post-pandemic transition, hybrid, whatever?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first one that I want to come back to that's just kind of flows from what we were just talking about is there is nothing more efficient than the truth. Mm-hmm. People will often say, a colleague of mine at Stanford coined that phrase, because we would do these executive programs and people say, oh my God, giving feedback takes so much time. And we used to say, well, there's nothing more efficient than the truth. So if I was going to say, keep a couple of concepts front and center, that's one of them. The second one is remain as curious as you possibly can, because never has it been more important for people to understand that what is going on for them may or may not be what is going on for someone else.
Right.
And so if you're behaving in some way that is just maddening to me, I can decide to label you an asshole and want to figure out how to work around you, or I can get curious. Mm-hmm. Jisoo, you know, what's happening?
What's going on for you?
And by the way, curiosity is impossible unless you suspend judgment.
Right.
You don't have to suspend judgment forever, but you're going to have to suspend judgment long enough to actually be curious. Find out what's going on for someone else.
And having a wondering about it. The one you said before, like if they're being an asshole, there's probably a reason. There's probably something that's going on at home or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I am big on always naming my intent so that people understand what's behind my question. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm asking you this because I'd actually like to find a way to work better together. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you this because I don't want to get to the point where I'm so discouraged that I actually stop doing my best work. Mm-hmm. I hope the outcome of a conversation we can have is that we can get to a point where we can figure out together how we can best get through this. So there's always, the more complete you are, the better the interpersonal exchange is likely to be.
Right. I love it.
And I guess the last thing that I'll say is that we call the book Connect because connection is really fundamental to human beings. Yeah. Human beings want to be seen and heard and valued. Mm-hmm. We want that and others want that. Mm-hmm. And so back to in business, people do business with people. And if I don't think you give a crap about me, I am unlikely to go out of my way to do something for you.
Right. Exactly. I love it. I love the book. It's called Connect, and you can find it on connectandrelate.com. Leadersintech.org is also your website. Obviously, you can find Carol on LinkedIn. And you can find the book on Amazon, of course. Thank you for being so helpful, supportive. I love your examples that you give. I love how calm you are. It's inspirational. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And that I would back at you, I would say that was an excellent example of feedback on something that you appreciated. Mm-hmm. I never use positive and negative feedback. Some people might have called that positive feedback. I never use that because all feedback's positive because it's always data. Right. And when you're giving somebody feedback on something that you've appreciated about them, our tendency is to say, hey, nice job.
That a boy, that a girl.
You know, good job, thanks. Now, let's compare that to the level of specificity that you just offered. Mm-hmm. And now I know what I did that worked for you. Mm-hmm. And if we were going to do more work together, I'd be much more grounded and have concrete understanding of how to show up in a way that would work best for you, which, by the way, might be totally different than someone else.
Yeah. So thanks for that. Appreciate it. Mahalo, as we say here in Hawaii. Let me just real quickly talk about next time. So we'll be together again August 25th at 2 p.m. Pacific with Stephanie Johnson. She's the author of Inclusify, The Power of Uniqueness and Belonging to Build Innovative Teams. Okay, so we're applying all of what we're talking about, though, to this, to our culture, to the whatever we're calling it, the hybrid, the reopening, the post-pandemic, whatever word works, the chaos, the mess, trying to apply all of everyone's work to that right now, because that's what's up. And there's a ton of uncertainty, and we need to be doing this together, because we're not going to be able to do it by ourselves. Self-care, everybody. Self-care. Support.
Thank
get
you.
Support.
Thanks all right. for giving me the chance to spread my message.
Yes, of course. We love it. We love it. Thanks again, Carol. And thanks, everybody, for being here.